Morning, Minister, and your team, Deputy Minister, DG, the CEO of Govan Printing Works, and all your executive, honorable members, welcome to this important meeting. We're scheduled to deal with two updates or briefing reports on the Lubisi report and the panel that was established by the minister. To conduct or to look on the affairs of the government printing works. We'll not waste time. We'll deal with the two reports, three and five, and we'll then invite members to comment on those or contribute to the issues that will be arising from the two reports. In other words, we'll invite the minister to introduce first report, give remark on the Lubisi report, and also short remark on the Govan Printing Works report that was led by Advocate Gumbi, Mujung Gumbi. And then we will then invite the DG and the CEO to make a presentation. We'll now invite Mr. Mathonsi on item number two, if there are apologies from members, and I'll also invite the minister to introduce his team and render an apology, and also Govan Printing Works CEO, and then we'll then move to item number three and five. Mr.
Good morning, Chairperson, and morning, everyone. Yeah, from the committee side, I did not receive any apology. The only apology that was indicated was that the DG is here in the meeting already, but he indicated that he's going to leave at 5 minutes to 10. He has got another meeting to attend, the Secretary General meeting. That's all from my side, Chair.
Okay, thanks very much, members. If there's no any apologies, I will invite Minister to introduce his team. Minister?
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, honorable members. Can I invite the DG to indicate to the committee who is here from Home Affairs?
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Thank you. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, DM, Chairperson, honorable members of the committee. From Home Affairs, Chairperson is Mr. Modiri Matthews, the acting DDG, responsible for Immigration Services, also joined by the CFO, Mr. Gordon Hollandby. And then from the Minister's office, it's Mr. Modupi Maselakamdoli, the Chief of Staff, and then Mosi Njoki, Organizing Officer of Parliament. And then from CAJC, that will take the lead in the presentation, is Mr. Peter Bishop. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG, CEO of Govan Printing Works.
Good morning, honorable Chairperson, honorable members of the DM, DG colleagues. I'm with members of EXCO from Government Printing Works, General Managers, Ms. Laura Moki, GM Corporate Services. I'm Gwen Moodley, General Manager, Manufacturing and Engineering. Mr. Sihle Ngubane, General Manager, Operations Management. And I'm joined by Advocate Ramasodi, the CIO, Mr. Zweli Mkhwebane, Ms. Shibambo, the Chief Audit Executive, Mr. Mashimana Mabuti, who is our Director EPMO, and Mr. Kambule, Director Executive Support. That's all from GPW, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, and the apology of the Director General is noted. Minister, I'm inviting you to introduce the two reports. Minister Mtsoaledi.
Thank you, Chair. Once more, Chairperson, and honorable members. Honorable members, you will remember that we brought the Lubisi report here in front of you, which had a number of recommendations. Chief among them was that we need to appoint a multidisciplinary team that will take forward all the issues that they unveiled during their investigation. A multidisciplinary team that will go very deep in investigating, which will consist of forensic investigators, data analysts, people who are dealing with case management, and lawyers, and all that. That was the first major recommendation. The second one, of course, was the issues of change in legislation, which they picked up quite a number of areas which we demand change in legislation. As you know, we are dealing with that part in the white paper on over the overhauling the whole immigration system of the country. But now back to the multidisciplinary team. The team chair was chosen because there was an anticipation that a lot of in the lot of work that they are going to be doing, government might need to retrieve its papers, which will have been obtained fraudulently. That will need a whole lot of procedures involving the cause of this country. So you need people who will be able to provide backup and be able to put up a strong story in front of the court. There might be people who get arrested. There will be disciplinary hearings in the department, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this team, Chair, was put up together and started functioning from the 1st of March, 2023, which means it's a year now. I will allow Mr. Bishop, who is the head of this team, to give a presentation of exactly since March the 1st, what have they done and where are we? I think that's the aim of this presentation. Thank you very much. Mr. Peter Bishop, please.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, Honorable Chair, Deputy Minister, Director General, members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, for this opportunity to give feedback to this committee in the important work that it's doing on the other side. I'll start with the presentation on page 2, if it can be please put onto the board. Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Matonzi. Yes, I thought Mozi was going to show it on the computer. Mr. Mozi, please can you share the? Thank you very much. You can proceed, Mr. Bishop.
Thank you, sir. So this is a briefing by the Department of Home Affairs, as outlined by the Minister, by the Honourable Minister. Page 2 on the contents, the presentation will cover an introduction, the Multidisciplinary Task Team, abbreviated as the MDTT, which I'll be referring to, in terms of its mandate, the MDTT composition, 25 focus areas for investigation, the MINCOM report, size of data sets obtained and analysed, legal opinion recommendations, level of profiles of all officials referred for disciplinary in 52 files in time, and other matters, level of profiles of new disciplinaries, progress on disciplinary matters, the MDTT progress, labour relations, directorate contingent liability on business process and standard operating procedures, labour relations directed data consolidation and cleaning. Page 3. Introduction. Slide 3 to slide 13. We have already previously introduced to the committee and discussed it. And for if the committee would like to hear me again on these slides, I will do so. If not, I'll take it that the committee has taken note of it, and I can move on. I'm guided by the Honourable Chair. Please.
Mr. Bishop. What is your suggestion to the presentation?
The suggestion is...
Chair, can I come in?
Thank you, Minister.
Yeah, it looks like Mr. Bishop is proposing that the committee has read this thing. and you can just choose and pick and choose. I prefer that you present the whole presentation from the beginning. He was on page 3, and I prefer that you go up there so that you understand everything. Otherwise, it's going to confuse you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Bischoff, part of the purpose of sharing the report on the... This is a public meeting. So you may have... Members may have received... We have received this document. We've gone through it. But members of the public may need to benefit to the issues that are arising from the report. So I will propose for your easing that talk to the report, talk to the pages. You may not read, but can talk to the issues page by page, so that also members of the public are following the issues that are arising from the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Minister, for that. Right, page 3, introduction, deals with the, as the Minister has already highlighted, that the MDTT started its work on the 1st of March 2023, and it follows a multidisciplinary approach with various disciplines that is required to effectively do its work and cover all areas that will be relevant to its outcomes at the end of the day. Highlighting the disciplinary legal implementation team dealing with legal matters, data analytics team dealing with all the data and highlighting all the anomalies that the data then presents, the case management team that manages the processes, the disciplinary investigative team, a criminal investigative team, a contingent liability SOP and training team, which makes up the components of this investigation. On page 4, the mandates as per the service level agreement concluded with the department and the MDTT includes the following primary deliverables: to conduct investigations, data analytics, include link analysis on the issues of visas and permits, as well as investigate, identify criminal syndicates for fraud, theft, corruption, and maladministration. Coordinate and improve the coordination of anti-corruption initiatives between the DHA and law enforcement agencies and provide expert opinions and advice, including attending court cases where necessary, departmental disciplinary hearings and dispute proceedings, and also testifying as expert witnesses where required. On page 5, this continues in terms of the MDTT mandate. You provide further expert and support in developing comprehensive anti-fraud and corruption preventive strategy and risk prevention plan for the department as we go ahead. As we proceed, we identify these risks and we start sharing this with the department. We are seeing new and developing trends that we come up in terms of the fraudulent activity that's going on, and then develop discussions around this and part of training initiative to then counter these, which has paid dividends already. Provide advice and recommendations on engineering of business processes and systems to address identified risks and close these gaps, which is very important, and prepare and present necessary progress reports by all relevant parties, structures, the audit committee, risk management committee, the executive management team, and timelessly, and this is managed by a SEACOM that's chaired by the director general of the department. Provide training to identify staff, and use data analytics and link analysis software in the training to show them the anomalies so that adjudicators dealing with these applications can identify possible fraudulent documentation and all activities. The team composition is, there are three in the directorship and management. There are three senior executives. There are two in profiling investigations at level 13 and 14. Level 12, there are six, and at level 11 and 12, there are two. In disciplinary, the disciplinary team is, there are five members. The data analytics expert, there are six, concerning of system data and specialist analysts that take the data and make it intelligent so that the investigators can make sense of what is being seen and what the data is telling you. business process engineering and looking at as part of the expert and support services, which there are a number of people that deal with the SOPs and any other matters that need urgent attention and possible amendment, which is put forth to the department. On page 7, as from the Lubisi report, the recommendations were that there were 25 focus areas for investigation that needed to be prioritized. They deal with, one, the appeal processes, and basically where all permanent residency permits were previously rejected and then approved after appealing and files sent to the appeals process with no application documents on record, and they have also not followed the adjudicating processes adequately. And we have to, unfortunately, look at every single matter here, and the analysis team have, as they go, they have found more and more of these type of matters that are being investigated or flagged for investigation. Then it's the visa facilitation center system and the visa adjudication system applications, all applications and information which is in VAS, which and reflected and not reflected in the VFS system, and all application information which is the VFS and not reflected in VAS. So there are records that don't balance with each other, which they should be balancing with each other. From applications to the Home Affairs system should be balancing. All applications loaded onto the VAS, but have no associated application supporting information. So there's just an electronic application, but there's no hard copy information that is normally scanned in by VFS for every application, which is then adjudicated on. All applications, the difference between the passport numbers captured in VFS and the passport numbers loaded on VAS, there's those differences we found. Which has been confirmed that is also what the BC found. This has also been found by the NBTC. All applications and with passport numbers, differences by the application status. And each case needs to be investigated, unfortunately, in this matter, to come to a conclusion what needs to happen. Then there's the next year SABMT forensic investigation report. That is a report that of findings done previously handed to the MDTT, where there were key loggers and irregular security breaches on the systems of the department in VAS, and the investigations are continuing in that matter. Then you have the passes and profits. These matters have been planned for investigations and due to a lack of data sets, but that at that time we have now recovered a lot of data, and a number of matters have been referred to the DPCI for criminal investigation in these matters. The track and trace system is a legacy system that the department's used to 2014 to capture all visas applications, and all applications on this we have to then look at as well, because we have found that current VAS systems are circumvented, and they are still using the system that has already been phased out. On the PRPs, permanent residency permits, all PRP applications that were approved before 5 years that had expired and did comply with continuous period and only being 90 days before a day outside the country during the 5 years period, those are one of the areas. All PRP applications approved but had been declined previously due to false documentation having been submitted, and all issues, visitor visa status changes to PRPs whilst in the country, and PRPs with common patterns of forum shopping and brute force tactics among some foreign nationals shifting from one application to the other. Well, what that means is when they fail with one application, they just apply for another visa, and so they carry on until they eventually succeed or not. And each case needs to be investigated. A lot of the PRPs form the basis of the PRPs form the basis of the appeals as well. On page 9, on point 7, business permits, all business permits approvals that were found to be skewed were analyzed, indicating 1,137, which were approved over the same period in the track and trace system, the legacy system. These application approvals should have been processed through VFS and VAS and not TNT, as I already highlighted earlier on, which case needs to be investigated here to identify the anomalies and the people involved in these applications. Underage visas, all underage applicants for critical and exceptional skill visas and permits due to a data capture error involving gross misconduct. Each case needs to be investigated to avoid any manipulation on the data. It would be best to conduct that investigation. Work visas and critical skills, 0.9. All work visas approvals that were applicants changed their visa from worker to critical skills visa and back to a PRP worker. In each case, we need to investigate to avoid any manipulation of the data. Study visas and critical skills visa, all study visa applications followed by critical skills visa applications. Each one has to be looked at. Page 10, number 11, study visas, all study visas that include multiple spelling variations on the generic system, learners, and not applicable. So when it says what is the applicant going to study, it just says not applicable. And those things have to be looked at, those matters have to be looked at. 12, retirement visas, all approved retirement visas with a significant increase in applications for the period 2016 to 2018, all retirement visas below the age of 55, all retirement visas where applicants have applied for another visa due to a change in status, i.e. the spousal relationship or work or to work in South Africa on retirement. And all retirement visas awarded in contravention of Section 20 of the Immigration Act, regulations related minimum amounts per month to pensions from pension to irrevocable annuity of all retirement account. Each case needs to be looked at. Irregular system users created by on MCS, movement control system, all the movement control system process transactions created by irregular users. I will talk about that a little bit later. Each case needs to be looked at, and there are many of them. All hours on page 11, number 14, after hour weekends and public holiday visa process on VAS, all visa applications were processed after hours over weekends and public holidays on VAS by officials. Each matter needs to be investigated to avoid any manipulation of data. Irregular process flows of stage codes, all applications that were processed following an irregular process flow of storage codes and those that had extra fields populated. Storage codes relates to the sequence of events on the system as approvals are followed from one person to the next to authorization. Each needs to be looked at because we found irregularities by the MINCOM was found and we've also seen irregularities in those patterns. 16, identified anomalies to the date in the dates related to approvals and the printing of visas, all cases where the printing data was before the visa approval date. We have to look at those matters as well. Missing visas or permit control numbers on 17, bullet 17, sorry, number 17. All internal audit findings relate to missing visa and permit printed control numbers. Page 12, number 18. Same passport numbers used by multiple persons, all passport numbers being used by multiple persons. We found some of those already. Number 19, fast processing applications, all applications that were processed and approved between 0 and 1 day and less than 0 days. 20, visa dates issued in the future, all visas that were issued in the future. Some visas were found to be issued in risk expiry date 2032, when it was only meant to be for 5 years from date of issue. 21, the national population register anomalies found, all anomalies found during the finalization of the NPR work. We're busy with that. And 22, the VFS and Home Affairs email addresses associated to an application is where Home Affairs officials' addresses and email addresses have been cited on applications of foreign nationals, which is flagged on the data. Page 13, number 23, visa and permits rejected, approved with fraudulent documented, detected. All 880 applications approved containing fraudulent documentation detected during adjudication processes. Each case needs to be investigated. They also form very much a process in terms of the appeals irregularities that we have detected. 24 applications rejected due to fraudulent documentation submit, but new applications approved. All 4,160 applications that were rejected due to fraudulent documents submitted and applicants later applied for other visa permit types which were approved. Let's look at them as well in detail. Firewall irregularities on number 25, the potential corrupt involvement of officials in companies appointed to install firewalls in the DHA provincial office data systems. That matter has already been referred to the police for criminal investigations by the department. On slide 14, page 14, size of the data set obtained. We have already, we are dealing with 11.93068578. So in short, about 11.9 billion records. Basically what the records that we get from Home Affairs are cleaned up. They are structured properly. They are then are put into the various entity resolution processes and the metadata tells us of what needs to be done. You have network diagrams linked, which talk to the link analysis and link charts that links everybody together. And then you have the temporary staging data, which put data into structured results that is then shared with the investigators and legal teams. And the transformed end result is really the picture of what the data is telling you in an overall sense. And this is forms the basis of the work of the NDTT that guides us to try and work through the voluminous information that we have as provided by the Ministerial Committee and then also flagging additional matters as we proceed. On page 15, slide 15, we have the opinion and recommendations that have been provided. This particularly is a legal opinion that was provided to the Office of the Director General on the 9th of November, 2023, providing recommendations in respect of remedial actions to be taken by the department in respect of certain categories of applicants. The recommendation by the JV legal team, was as follows. To ensure adherence to due process and on caution, it is imperative that all affected parties implicated in holding fraudulent visas or permanent residence permits receive due notice. In instances where these individuals cannot be located for service, an application for substitution of service must be filed to guarantee that proper notification is provided to them, these applicants. Once adequate notices have been given in terms of the acts, the applicants found with fraudulent visas or PRPs should be added to the V listing, which then is a system that then declares you a persona non grata in South Africa and deported in accordance with Section 32 and 34 of the Immigration Act. This includes individuals already declared prohibited persons and subsequently then V-listed. In cases where applicants possess visas obtained through fraudulent means, these visas must be annulled as per Section 10 in brackets 9 and 10 and 10 in brackets of the Immigration Act, ensuring procedural fairness throughout the process. Upon the annulment of these visas, these individuals should be deported. Similarly, applicants with PRPs acquired fraudulently must have these permits revoked by the Director General under Regulation 23 of the Immigration Regulations in conjunction with Form 18 with a steadfast commitment to procedural fairness. following the revocation of the PRPs, which are the permanent residency permits, these individuals should face deportation. For applicants who have deceitfully obtained naturalization, the minister must strip them of their naturalization rights, as outlined in Section 8 of the Citizenship Act, with procedural fairness being a priority. After such deprivation by the minister, the process of deportation should be initiated. In this regard, we have met with the Director General, and we will be meeting in due course with the legal team, as well as the Special Investigating Unit that has just been awarded a proclamation by the President for investigations into the affairs of Home Affairs, to take and plot a way forward to deal with these particular matters that have been flagged by the analytics team and the investigating team. Slide 16, level profiles of all officials referred for disciplinary actions and criminal. These 52 matters were referred to the MDT by the Labor Department of Home Affairs, of the Department of Home Affairs, are systems that were already been in the process of disciplinary processes or were awaiting further investigative processes to unfold to get these matters to finalization. This currently, to date, the level profiles of the official identified in the disciplinary referrals fall within the following salary levels. Salary level 1 to 12, there are 59 officials. In level 13, salary level 13, there's one. In salary level 14, there's one. In 15 and 16, there are none. Two matters in these particular cases have been referred to the DPCR task team that has been set up to deal with the MDTT referrals by the head of the DPCI, General Labia. And two members have already one official has. So where you see the star, which says 60 officials in total that have been referred to the MDT, one official has got two separate matters, and that is why it's 60 and not 59. Then the level profiles of officials in new matters, new disciplines in respect of matters referred or in the process of being referred to the DPCI task team. You have 77 applications in the bar graph. You have 77 applications linked to 306 applications that are decisions made by 49 people that we are predicting will be converted into 33 criminal referrals to DPCI, as can be seen on the graph. A further 7,083 additional applicants linked to potential 21,267 potential applications are also currently being flagged for investigation. Of the 49 decision makers, which are the staff dealing with the applications and sign off to ultimately the or refusal of a visa or permit, 33 new referrals have been linked to slide 18, which I'll be discussing in due course, and we can move to slide 18 in this regard. These are level profiles of officials and new disciplinaries. There are five matters flagged on this slide. Matter one deals with retirement visas, which deals with Algerian foreign nationals. There are 15 officials linked to 16 applicants with 63 applications, which are busy for criminal referrals or have been referred. We have identified a further 3,525 applications that have similar criteria as found in terms of irregularity and fraudulent documentation. Matter two on the slide deals to China and SARS cooperation and China Beijing office, foreign mission office, and a particular street in Johannesburg that houses most of these people. 31 officials have been linked to 187 applicants with 371 applications. The number of criminal referrals to be determined once additional information is assessed. We have requested more information from the analysts and from the department in relation to these Chinese nationals that have been flagged. In matter three, this relates to Pakistan foreign nationals, where 13 officials have been linked to 12 applicants with 43 applications. And in those matters, there are 11 criminal referrals. In matter four, which deals with a particular matter involving the pastors and prophets, and a recalcitrant agency that processes visas on behalf of applicants. 15 officials linked to 33 applicants with 140 applications. Up to 30 criminal referrals are being prepared on this matter. We have identified a further 355 applicants that are projected to have approximately 1,100 applications that will be allocated to investigators. On matter five, we are dealing with pastors and prophets. Six officials have linked to 12 applicants with 43 applications. Six matters have already been referred to the DPCI staff. On page 19, on the process of disciplinary actions, there are 27 charge sheets that have been finalized and submitted to the department by the legal team. Five disciplinary hearings have commenced and are in proceeding as we speak. 10 disciplinary matters that have been proposed have been set down for dates. 12 disciplinary matters have been concluded. 9 officials have been dismissed. 1 official has been dismissed and is subject to an appeal. And 2 officials have resigned when notices were served on it. On page 20, back to 19, these matters that have been finalized, I have been in the terms of the disciplinary process, and in particular 2 for now have been referred to the DPCI for investigation. Page 20, the MDCT is currently focusing in the short term on the following impactful areas requiring urgent attention. Matters aligned to the focus areas as identified in the Ministerial Committee report and aligned to the mandate of the MDTT as aforementioned, example, specific high-profile matters that are related to criminal and to disciplinaries. Matters referred to respective law enforcement agencies but requiring additional unlocking activities, such matters to gain traction. We are provided a lot of information to them to get these matters moving forward. And I refer to the DPCI in this matter. Urgent matters referred by the director in disciplinary matters that are prioritized. Referred discipline matters requiring review and unblocking activity to ensure timely resolution of such matters and minimizing of potential fruitless and wasteful expenditure when necessary. All sound working sessions have been fostered as we proceed by the MDT with corruption, counter-corruption, labor relations unit, ICT in progressing in these investigations. We're very happy with the collaboration we are receiving from the Office of the Minister, the Director General, and senior management in the department. 21, progress of the NDT continues. Investigations, the criminal investigation team prioritized or investigated and prepared 28 matters related to 28 individuals referred to the Director General, which was sent to the DPCI task team. Investigate and is currently in the process of preparing a further 94 matters relating to 94 individuals to be considered for referral to the DPCI by the Director General. Identified up to as many as 370,178 instances of potential implicated individuals in unlawful and or irregular activities related to processing of visas and permits. That's across the spectrum. On slide 22, the progress on the investigations continue. Identified 115 instances of officials implicated in potentially unlawful or irregular activities. Identified 78 instances of questionable medical reports which were submitted in applications and are being prepared. Identified 76 instances of questionable radiology reports that have been submitted that have been identified. In respect of up to as many as identified 303,832 potentially unlawful and or irregular MCS movement process by officials of the department, 30 officials and associate numbers of movement authorized by each were identifying them as being investigated. And this is going to form a big part of the legal opinion that we provided and that will be looked at in that regard in particular. Phase 23, investigations continue. Related to retirement visas and permits, initial investigation focus was primarily on 3,530 retirement person visas applications or visa issued that allegedly use similar documentation in retirement person visa applications and where on the face of it, such individuals appear to be too young to be retiring. Preliminary findings to date have identified a number of officials involved with three DHA officials appearing to have processed the bulk thereof. Assisted with the drafting of 23 support affidavits that was referred to the DPCI as part of the criminal investigation process that they are busy with, as referred by the Director General. The last bullet, a dedicated task team has had several meetings with the DPCI and in fact on an ongoing basis to focus on matters referred by the NDTT and the DG to ensure prioritization and tracking of these matters. These investigations are progressing well as we've determined. Phase 24, from a data analysis conducted in respect of three identified applicants, the following was identified. Linkages with at least 8 DHA officials, linkages with 115 other foreign nationals, linkages with 17 South African nationals, and linkages with 34 businesses. Due to the extensive networks related to these three identified applicants, both intra and extra of the department, high likelihood exists that syndication related to irregular and unlawful activities may be uncovered as investigations progress in these matters. Phase 25, slide 25, investigation on Chinese foreign nationals. A preliminary analysis of available evidence relating to the identified Chinese nationals led to the identification of an address as a nodal point referred to in at least 3,193 applications for various visas or permits for the Chinese foreign nationals. Two department officials at the Beijing mission in China have each been linked to 142 and 45 of these above-mentioned applicants, respectively. The MD performed further data analysis uncovered a further 187 applicants, warranted immediate further investigation as this number is rapidly escalating as further investigations are undertaken by the MDTT. Relating to the broad identified addresses, certain specific addresses utilized 477 appear to be related to vacant Ervin, whilst in respect of other addresses, 75 appear to be non-existing addresses in South Africa. Further investigations are ongoing. In certain instances, the same addresses were utilized by up to 488 applicants, being highly unusual in these regards. We would expect each applicant or a few applicants that are related would be sharing an address, but not hundreds of them sharing an address. Labor on 26, Labor Relations Director, Contingent Liability, Development of Business Process and Standard Operating Procedures. In the 2021-22 financial year, the Audit General found that the Labour Relations Human Resource Directorate lacked sufficient business process to support their contingent liability reporting. Pursuant to this, the Director General instructed the MDTD to assist the Labour Relations Department to develop a business process and standard operating procedure for the management reporting of contingent liability. This intervention has been undertaken by CHAV under the auspices and direct management of the CEO, Mr. Shaki Williams, and head of the legal team. CHAV received and analysed various data sheets and information from Labour Relations and developed a draft business process and standard operating procedure, which was presented to the Directorate on 15 April 2023 and accepted and approved by the Directorate. Slide 27. Labour Relations Director data consolidation and cleaning. On the 8th of September 2023, Labour Relations provided the MDT with various data sheets and instructed the MDT to consolidate these data sheets into a single database containing all misconduct and non-misconduct, including their contingent liability effects. The MDT consolidated all the data provided by the Labour Relations and undertook extensive cleaning of the data. We also undertook various exploratory data analysis and time series analysis of the data and collated our findings in a preliminary report, which was presented at the DDG of Labour Relations on the 13th of October 2022. The report contained four findings in respect of the management of the combined data sheets going forward and eight operational recommendations based on the insight gained from the analysis. And that concludes this presentation, Honourable Chair and Minister and members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bishop. Minister, please can you introduce the Governed Printing Works presentation?
Yes, Chair, thank you very much. You will remember that it was after the collapse of the system that I put up a task team chaired by Advocate Mujangu Gumbi, the former legal advisor of the presidency. And as part of their recommendations, which were put in front of these committees, they recommended that a forensic investigation need to be undertaken, because one of the questions that they could not answer during their investigation was whether the collapse of the system was an act of sabotage or what actually caused it. You remember that in their report, they found the thin line to be drawn between sabotage and omissions, deliberate omissions, etc. So they wanted the forensic team to go deep into that, and they made many other recommendations, which I think were presented in front of this committee. So today, the CEO will provide to you the progress in implementing the recommendations that were made by that team led by Advocate Mujangu Gumbi. Ms. Fosi, please, can you take over?
Ms. Fosi?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister, Honorable DM, Honorable Members, DG and colleagues. I need to also from Government Printing Works, the presence of our CEO, Mr. Ian van der Merwe, and Ms. Michelle Modise from HR. That I omitted later when I introduce all the members. Let me appreciate the opportunity to present this report to honorable members today. Members will recall that the last report that we presented was in August 2023. If Chair, you allow me to share the presentation from my side. Chair, I'm not sure if it's visible.
Yeah, it's visible. We can proceed, CEO. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm trying to put it on the presentation mode. Okay, so let me start in the interest of time. Oh, yeah, okay. Thank you. This is just a presentation outline. Today we are providing progress, which is a status update on GPW's implementation of the MRP recommendations to members of the portfolio committee. This is just a background and really to refresh the minds of the members of the incident that hit us on the 4th of February 2021, where the EVA hardware containing servers and systems supporting critical functions at GPW crashed and resulted in loss of critical data. And the minister has spoken to the appointment of the panel, and they focused specifically, and this was their scope of work, on ICT, HR, finance, operations and production, as well as security services. The report was subsequently finalized and presented to minister, and it was also presented to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. We received the report in September 2022 and immediately developed action plans. And we were then able to execute recommendations. Just by way of historical background, the challenges that we have identified, GPW, as in when the task team started, discovered that there was a lot of instability within the organization, which has historically plagued this GPW, and that has had a negative effect on organizational culture. There were incidences of managers who were leaving, especially executive management, leaving without proper handover, therefore impacting negatively on business continuity. We also had an inherent challenge of capacity in terms of positions on the structure because of the how the structure was configured. Certain positions were not provided for, and therefore we had to go through the review of the structure, which was subsequently approved by the minister with the concurrence of the minister of DPSA to fill those capacity gaps. We also have external dependencies on policy and regulatory matters. For instance, we couldn't go out and procure our own ERP system using the normal procurement processes. We had to go through National Treasury because of the IFMS system. So you had to apply for an exemption from the IFMS provisions before you could actually go and provision such a system. I can announce that last month in February, we received an approval from National Treasury. We had applied last year. So they've granted us an exemption to go out and seek our own ERP system. We are engaging CETA in this regard just to make sure that we have a proper ERP system for GPW instead of using the legacy systems. We also were confronted with challenges related to dilapidated ICT infrastructure system upgrades. And that required also a tech refresh so that we can upgrade the entire environment in the ICT. CETA has been one of the institutions that we've been dealing with. It's also part of the MRP recommendations that we need to engage CETA on procurement processes that ICT requires so that we can gain traction in those areas. Yes, there have been delays experienced dealing with CETA, but currently we are engaging with the executive to make sure that we attain progress. Cost containment measures. The MRP report recommended certain positions to be filled. And whilst we were in the process of filling the post, we then were hit with the circular from National Treasury, which put a moratorium on the filling of posts starting from the 1st of October last year. And as a result, some of the posts couldn't be filled timely. The legacy audit matters have been experienced by GPW as a result of the system crash, as well as the data loss experience. At an implementation level, I've mentioned the issue of the structure, which we started implementing on the 1st of April following the approval process 2022. And then this affected was by the cost containment, as I've mentioned. The other recommendations were had dependencies on external entities like the Public Service Commission, National Treasury. But we have referred the cases accordingly as I've reported previously, and the Public Service Commission has since come back to GPW and they've closed their investigation, and the National Treasury as well came back on the issue of deviations and indicated the new instruction notice actually grants accounting authorities powers to handle the deviations. The investigations, by their nature, due to complexity of the issues that are being investigated, could take time, and we experienced the same in GPW. However, the forensic investigation team has now presented a report to management in 2024, and which was last month, and we were offered an opportunity to provide our comments. It's actually a very thick report, and management is actually consuming the content. And once it's finalized, we'll send back the comments, and then the final report can then be presented. Honourable members will recall when we presented in August, we were at 56% in August 2023. We can report that since then we indicated that we would be implementing recommendations in the short, medium and long term. And we promised that when we come back, we would have tried to implement those that were within the 6 months ambit. And we are now standing at 72% overall. A breakdown is such that finance is at 76%, security services at 67%, human resources at 76%, office of the CEO at 91%, ICT at 67%, manufacturing and engineering at 50%, operations management at 40%, internal audit has one which reflects a zero. And this doesn't in any way reflect that they are not doing anything. It's because their recommendation is linked to the implementation of the ISO standards. And that can only be done once all the ISO standards are being implemented, and they can then audit based on that. So we've embarked on a procurement process to make sure that we get a suitable service provider to assist us with that due to lack of internal capacity, because these are international standards that we need to comply with. And as soon as that is concluded, then internal audit can start and do its work. So it's one of the recommendations that are in the long term. Facilities management has concluded their recommendations, implementation, legal services at 0%. Also, the work that legal services does also has dependencies on the outcome of the forensic investigations that we have referred to. In summary, this is basically the status. We are now at 72% and 28% is underway. We have then gathered a project plan that further takes the recommendation into the categories that I've mentioned, short-term, medium-term, as well as long-term. So within the next 6 months, starting 1st of April, we are going to conclude 20 recommendations in 7 to 12 months, 15, and then the ones that are in the long-term, particularly locked in the procurement processes, we will then be concluding them in 12 months and above. And that includes procuring the services, and the execution must actually happen. And hence, we thought it should be in the long term, because it doesn't only end at appointing the service provider. In summary, 43% of those recommendations will be completed within the next 6 months, 32% in 12 months, and then 25% in 12 months and beyond. I'm going to indicate the progress that we have made since the last presentation per functional area. Financial services. There's a summary that I've already referred to. In terms of the summary, finance was expected to devise a comprehensive costing and pricing strategy with clear performance indicators. Progress has been achieved in this regard to date, because the pricing strategy was approved on the 2nd of May 2023. The costing workshop was also held with critical stakeholders on the 19th of October 2023. And the Fiscal Governance Committee, which also came as a result of the recommendations of the MRF, and it has been established and functional, will then be responsible for reviewing this policy annually, the strategy annually, and the next review due now in March. The costing policies were also approved in line with the recommendation of having the costing policy as well as the SOPs. In the same workshop of the 19th of October 2023, again, the Fiscal Governance Committee has been tasked with the responsibility to make sure that it is reviewed annually. The next review is happening in June this year. In line with the pricing policy, was also approved on the 2nd of May 2023, and it's aligned to the costing policy itself, because the strategy works hand in hand with the policy itself. It executes the policy. So in the workshop, again, the very same pricing strategy will be reviewed annually, with the next review being June 2024. We're expected to ring fence all the revenues and costs within our own trading account to ensure profitability margins that are sustained. We have actually done that. We've ring fenced all the items in the trading account. And we have looked at critical products such as passports and ID documents. And we have engaged Home Affairs just to make sure that we agree to the tariffs. And this is an engagement that is still happening between us and Home Affairs DG, so that it becomes a win-win situation at the end of the day. But we also make sure that GPW is not adversely affected by looking at the cost of manufacturing and production to ensure sustained revenue base and profitability levels. Inventory management is in place. We do monthly stock counts across all GPW offices. The terms of reference for the appointment of a service provider on a long term has been finalized, and we intend to get the service provider to start at the beginning of the new financial year so that we can have the sustained services. We have reported previously, and I think it was also picked up by the MRP team, that GPW had a history of contracts which were long-standing. And for instance, they would have a clause that says they will renew themselves automatically and it will last indefinitely. Finance has been working with legal services, contract management in particular, and we identified a number of 105 contracts, 45 were standard contracts. And within the two categories, which is sole supplier as well as single source, we had 56 single sole suppliers and 4 single source, which could have been identified as in the category as well of long-term contracts. And to date, I need to indicate that since the last meeting that we've held in August, we've managed to regularize all the long-standing contracts. And therefore, we either had to either do a review of the entire contract or have an addendum to make sure that the terminology of indefinitely doesn't exist anymore, and we tie them to fixed term contracts so that we can then review them at particular times. And at that point, we will have an opportunity to go back and test the market so that if there are new entrants, then they can be eligible to compete through the normal procurement processes. So we have managed to regularize the long-standing contracts within government printing works to date. In terms of security services, this is an area where, again, a number of challenges were identified because during investigations, we couldn't get footages, and security breaches would then go without any form of discipline being taken. We then were instructed to introduce an electronic visit management system, and that was installed, signed off, and is properly functional. The project plan for security was supposed to be in place for the implementation of the new security operating model. The model has been revised and approved and is being implemented through the security management plan, which is reviewed annually. GM Corporate Services oversees the execution of this plan, and the security committee has been functional and facilitates implementation of the plan. In terms of HR, HR was supposed to ensure that executive management positions are filled. I've introduced the managers in the meeting that we held physically in Cape Town last year. We have now in our midst GM Manufacturing and Engineering, Mr. Kuben Mudli, GM Operations Management, Mr. Sitlong Gubani, and GM Corporate Services, Ms. Nora Mudli. And they all started on the 1st of December last year. We also were supposed to ensure that contract management unit is properly restructured with experienced and professional, technically competent people. Director contract management has been appointed, and all posts in the on the directorate contract management have been filled. These officials have been subjected to training just to make sure that they manage the contracts effectively going forward. The implementation of systemic recommendations to manage the information leaking to external parties, GPW, again, was experiencing this challenge for a while, where information would be shared with members outside of, but without even proper authorization. GPW officials have been taken to peer training, as well as the ethics management training course, and we also put most of our officials through the information handling course. We have since reviewed our communication policy, and it has been approved. And this is solely meant to manage communication channels, how members should disseminate information to internal as well as external stakeholders. In terms of change management, GTEC was then appointed. It's part of the recommendations to come and help us with the change management strategy. This was finalized, approved, and presented to GPW management at our strategic management session for buy-in. And then the implementation plan has also been finalized and approved, and implementation in line with our APP starts on the 1st of April, 2024. I need to indicate that in the previous meeting, we have mentioned a number of cases, particularly on the consequence management side, which were handled by GPW in response to the recommendations And members will recall that I did mention that there were three final written warning letters issued at the time and two written warning letters issued, and there were 11 officials, which in the ICT environment were served with precautionary suspension letters. And then we then received the responses, and based on that, the written warnings were issued to some, and then others received the letters of reprimand as well. I need to indicate that this status is post that report that I had given in the last meeting. We then had to follow up on three cases. Those have been also concluded. The outcomes are that there was one issue that was closed as a result of insufficient evidence. And I need to indicate that this is a case that was referred to the Public Service Commission, and then it came back because the committee wanted us to follow through on the recruitment of one individual. And because of the system crash and the data loss, the spreadsheet where all the incumbents were captured couldn't be retrieved from the system. And because of that, we couldn't provide the information that was required. However, the case was investigated internally, and then we had to conclude based on the facts at hand. The written warning was the one, and then the number of suspension, there was only one official. In terms of Office of the CEO, I've already presented the summary. We were supposed to refer the matter of the deviations to AGSA for investigation. What we did, we shared the MIP report with the AGSA team that is responsible for the GPW's audit. And what has been happening is that they perused the report, and they've been using the report to raise RFIs or requests for information in areas where they deemed it fit to actually interrogate GPW further on this. And the findings of AGSA have been incorporated in the management report as well as the audit report. A summary of these findings were also included in the annual report, which was submitted to Minister of Home Affairs and thereafter tabled to Parliament. The next two recommendations, one on the allegations of impropriety involving the concentration of power in the privacy of office, as well as the one on the appointment of Intervate and DEC, to ascertain the appointment, whether it was legal or not. The matter is the one that is being handled by the investigating team. I need to indicate that the nature of the recommendations that GPW received from the MRP, most of them were those that were internally focusing and had to be executed by managers, the management themselves, and some had to be referred out for forensic investigation. So most of what I'm reporting now is what we had to do as a management collective internally, but the forensic investigation team had to focus on the contracts which had to be investigated. So that's the report that I said is being considered, and as soon as the comments have been incorporated, we will then come back and then report accordingly. ICT also has a two-pronged approach. There are those investigations, the recommendations that we had to do internally, and others we had to engage CETA. So in view of that, internally we had to look for specialist maintenance services so that we can have agreements signed and finalized, because it was found that some of the ICT contracts were not locked into a service and maintenance agreements. So we then have service levels agreements for all the specialist services signed within government printing works. The Microsoft Enterprise Agreement has also been signed. And we have also acquired professional services for a period of 36 months about the environment. Engaging CETA as an ICT partner, we have actually been engaging with CETA, and the CETA business agreement has been signed. I've really met with the MDs that have been coming into CETA, and several meetings have happened between us to address all the procurement-related matters that are bedeviling GPW, and there's been delays from CETA's side. We're engaging them on the 10-year strategy review, and consultations are actually continuing amongst the experts. The MOU has already been signed, as I've mentioned. In terms of access to information systems, we had a challenge where the access to our networks was an issue, but at this point, the professional services are actually helping us, and the ICT strategy has been approved and is being implemented. Consequence management, as I've mentioned, that has already been considered by labor relations, as I've mentioned in the previous slide. The DISCs procurement from the service providers, just to make sure that we have enough capacity to store our information. We had to look into the disc grabbing process as well as the cataloging of those discs. So we came up with a process flow and a procedure that should be followed to make sure that the actual cataloging and the scrubbing happens unhindered. And it's been incorporated into the ICT maintenance policy. Servicing of UPS and aircons and all the environmental service provider for the maintenance of UPSs and air conditioners have been appointed, and the UPSs and air conditioners are also being maintained. We have to come up with the services of a contractor to stabilize the ICT environment. I've already indicated that we've acquired services of a professional over a 36-month period. In terms of co-location, we have procured the Microsoft Azure platform, which will be utilized for the migration of the workloads while ICT engage with the procurement of infrastructure. Servers copied to the BCX data center are being implemented. And what we're doing, we're creating test backups to make sure that the information that has been stored, we can retrieve it and it can be restored so that it's used by GPW officials. And ICT has been managing to restore the data that has been saved without actually being corrupted. Contingency plan for procurement of critical skills, CETA business agreement is covering this as well as the professional services, as well as the capacity. We have actually appointed a number of officials at the deputy director level. The CIO has since joined and we have a director in the environment. What we did to beef up capacity as well, we appointed some of the deputy directors as acting directors so that we can increase levels of accountability and responsibility in this environment so that we can continue to stabilize it. Mentioned the issue of the visa registration system. It's the one that is shared between ICT as well as security that's responsible for the software. The time-sensitive electronic access control, the user management process is in place. And what has happened, previously you'd find that our network was very vulnerable, and we then had to put tighter controls in place to make sure that access to our systems and network is only by authorized users. And when you gain access, using your own name, so that we don't have codes of people that are not known to the system. So that has also been tightened. Security policies, again, it's one that's shared between the security of information of people, of facilities as well, and it's shared between security and ICT. The security operating model is approved. ICT security policies have been approved, and as well as related security policies. And the two are working together to make sure that the system is actually up to date and is fully functional. Patching software upgrade has been completed. We've got the Windows Server 2008 R2 upgraded, Windows SharePoint 2010, SharePoint 2016, Microsoft IS 7.5, as well as Net 2.0 upgraded. Patch management is performed monthly, and vulnerability pen tests are also conducted. Involved have already spoken to that. We've actually asked it to avail the white space. A proposal has been received by GPW so that they can help us with remote backup. It doesn't have to only have a backup on-prem, and then when we confronted with the challenge, we don't have remote backup. So we've got the CSIR. Now we've requested CETA to also provide the white space for a remote backup. Scrapping of new disk, I've already mentioned that it is actually happening. And we are cataloging them accordingly. Manufacturing and engineering, our core branch, was supposed to make sure that the business continuity plan include the procedures for each operation and production section. What we've done, we've assessed the disaster recovery requirements to date, and we've developed the procedures in terms of business continuity for travel documents, identity documents, exams, and certificates. And officials have been training to make sure that they can respond to the disaster in the event of need. Operations management, our second core branch, they had five recommendations. We also had to look at the standards, which are the most appropriate one to implement. I've mentioned the ISO standards project earlier. We've evaluated this, and these are all the number of standards that we have gone out to seek services of a suitable service provider so that they can help us to make sure that we can have them implemented in GPW, and thereafter internal audit once implemented we'll look into that. I've spoken to the issue of internal audit. They will only do the work once the work is concluded. Facilities management has actually concluded all their recommendations. In conclusion, Chairperson, honorable members, I need to mention that we commit As we have done previously, we will continue to implement all the recommendations within the short, medium, and long term to ensure the enhancement of operations as well as overall improvement of governance within the organizations. On this score, I recommend that the presentation be noted. Thank you, Chairperson. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much, CEO. Thanks, Mr. Bischoff and the Minister. Members, this is a progress report on the recommendations for implementation by Home Affairs and the Government Printing Works. I'm going to invite members to comment or raise questions on the issues which are raised. Mr. Mathonsi, you'll assist me to recognize hands. I'm noting that there's a hand of Honorable Lizelle, Honorable Pillay, Honorable Ruos, and you will assist me, Mr. Madusa. The hands that I have noted, Honorable.
There is Ms. Kanyile, Mr. President.
Okay, Honorable Kanyile, noted. Honorable Pillay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, let me firstly welcome the reports and the presentations made. Chair, the first one in respect of DHA, I'm just concerned that on page 19, it reflects that there's 27 charge sheets, there's only 12 that were finalized, 5 that have started and proceeding, and 10 disciplinary set-down dates. Now, Chair, my concern is that are these employees still within the system, meaning are they still employed at DHA while these processes are still unfolding? And I'm concerned that they've already been part of many incidents that are obviously going to compromise us as a department. I also want to know further, are there any other, and if they do, the number of employees that may be still within the system that are facing these disciplinaries or several charges? And then, Chair, to ask in respect of GPW, what has the consequence management been for those individuals that may be responsible, especially for data loss? And then again, the question, how many employees are still within GPW that are either facing disciplinary or have faced disciplinary? And what is going to be the contingency plan to be able to deal with ensuring that even though they've done these things, that it's not going to reoccur. And so I'm just concerned about that. And then lastly, Chair, is will the Department of DHA or the Minister consider, particularly around South Africans that may have been part of these passports that are fraudulent, receive some kind of amnesty so that they are able to then correct these things? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lizelle. Co-chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Chairperson.
Honorable Minister.
Chairperson, I'm sorry, I do not understand the last question by Honorable Peter. I just want to repeat before we leave it so that when we start responding, we can respond to it. I didn't understand this amnesty is talking about. Can you just clearly?
Okay. Honorable Lizelle, proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to our Minister and all our colleagues. Firstly, I would like to say thank you to the presenters for the presentation. I would like to start off with the presentation in terms of the Lubisi report. And there's no doubt that work is being done. However, Chairperson, my concern is if you look at the volume of the work and you look at all the slides and all the investigations on each of the cases, the process in itself is taking very long. And so my question then becomes, do we have any set time frames in which we will finalize all of these investigations? Because, yes, the Minister did make mention this task team or MDTT has already been in establishment for a year. But prior to that, we received the report, I think, in the year before. So it's a long time coming, and the end result is that there are thousands of people who are operating within South Africa's borders with fraudulent visas and documentation. And if you add to that, for example, the fact that many people are in South Africa running businesses on asylum seeker or refugee temporary permits who are also not entitled to have those, then the picture becomes really dark. In other words, you know, we've got far too many people who are in possession of South African documents who are not entitled to have those. So firstly, I wanted to ask around the timeframes. Then with regard to the multidisciplinary task team itself, so it comprises, if I'm reading it correctly, of staff members. And in considering the shortages of this department in terms of staff, I wanted to know how many staff members are part of this team, and why we decided to take staff members and not an outside company, for example, considering also that staff are involved in the corruption within the department. Then with regards to, and I think this links to the concern that I have that investigations are taking far too long. Now, there's one slide which speaks to the fact that some applications have got the same passport number in multiple applications. And then it says each of these cases must be investigated. In my mind, if somebody has used the same passport for multiple applications, that passport must be blocked or blacklisted. I don't know what's the correct word. And you don't entertain any further applications. I don't know why. I understand an investigation should take place, but surely even when it says that, for example, when somebody submits fraudulent documents, an investigation must take place. Now, if you give us fraudulent documentation, certainly there's no investigation needed. You just end the application there and block that person from being able to apply for a visa in future because they've submitted fraudulent applications. And also my question, Minister, is clearly we don't have the capacity to go and investigate all of these, I don't know, is it 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 fraudulent applications? Why, when you've got a list of all the visas that have possibly been fraudulently issued, why don't we freeze those visas and ask those, you send out a circular to say, these visas have been flagged as having possibly been fraudulently obtained. Please come to the Department of Home Affairs to revalidate your visa. Okay, the next thing that might happen, some of these people might go to court, but I would rather take that process because I don't think a person that's in possession of a fraudulent document would actually seek the court's intervention. So I just feel that there's a lot of work that must go into all of this by trying to revalidate or look whether the visa is still valid or has it been fraudulently obtained. Why don't we do it the other way around? I'm just thinking aloud because I think the process is taking far too long. Then, Honourable Pillay did mention that, but the one slide speaks to the 52 people that have been identified as having been involved, but then there's a slide 16 which speaks to about 80 staff members that are involved in the various, issuing a possible fraudulent visas to Chinese, Pakistani and Algerian individuals, and then only 27 charge sheets. So that is concerning considering that it seems that more people are involved, and then we're only dealing with 27 charge seats. And I want to know with regards to the people that have resigned. So if they resign, that's it. No charges against them. We don't follow it up. It doesn't seem right to me. And then with regards to, I want to make a general comment on the spousal visas. I take it that the reason why spousal visas are taking so long to be, you cannot really, it's very difficult to verify from the department side whether people who have entered into marriages are deceiving you or whether it's a real marriage or not. And I want to know what is the remedial action that we're going to be taking here, because it takes far too long to issue these spousal visas, and I understand why, but clearly there needs to be an intervention here. And Minister, I just also want to make a general comment on the issue of visas and visa processing in your department. For example, it took me a month to follow up a matter involving somebody that works for Prince Africa Zulu. He did mention it to you. I emailed your department every day for about a whole month, and nobody responded except the DG. And we can't expect the DG to be doing everybody's work. And it's very concerning that if, you know, and I don't want to be, I didn't even want the visa to process to be finalized. I just wanted feedback. So clearly not all is well within our department. And then finally, on the issues of GPW, I think as much as one recognizes work is being done, it seems to me always that when we listen to the presentations of GPW, that it's either work in progress or an investigation is still being finalized or disciplinary action is still being finalized. It doesn't always give me confidence that we are moving forward. But I wanted to just ask, what were the results of the Public Service Commission investigation? And what are some of the remaining 20 in-progress investigations in the ICT section, if I can just ask that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Lizelle. Honourable Ross.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenters. Chair, I'll start with GPW. So, you know, the losses, the data losses, it cannot be underemphasized. How bad it is to lose multiple years worth of audit data. And, you know, I remember when I started work as a sales manager, my managing director came to me and said, you have to, before you get your commission, et cetera, you have to take this document and you have to make sure that it's backed up, et cetera, et cetera. That accounting officer in that company took the time to make sure that everybody was backing up critical financial data up to 5 years back, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really disappointing. As much as I hear the question that has come in terms of there's been disciplinaries against some more officials that are directly involved in backups, et cetera. But the fact that the accounting officer seems to have just completely got away with this. But my question here really is that in our last meeting on this, I was blown away by the fact that after four different sets of crashes of various extents, that it seemed that the backup was still not in place. Now, unless I'm misunderstanding the CEO, it sounded like she said they're still testing the backups to see if they are working. So I'd just like to understand, are the backups in place now? I'm talking about offsite backups, full redundancy backups. If we can just get clarification, because now it's been months since the last meeting, and I'm getting the impression that perhaps these backups are still not in place. Then, Chair, on the Lubisi report, we welcome the investigation, Chairperson. And we also share the concerns that it's been years and years and years, and it goes on and on. And the persons that are involved in this continue to operate within this environment. And so I agree with Honourable Pillay what he's talking about. Are these persons still in the system and the risk in that regard? Because the Lubisi report had told us 45,000 fraudulent visas were issued in the seven-year period of this report. And it, you know, if in the time that it took to issue those 45,000 visas, you could have done away with a 50,000 visa backlog. There's a direct relationship here. And yes, there are fraudulent marriages, but because of this backlog, families are being broken up legit with the South African spouse. So, but what I want to understand really is, as much as we're investigating this, you know, the report talks about the creation of a system to issue fraudulent documents, deliberate bypassing of controls to manipulate these applications. But I haven't seen any IT capital projects on any of our reports since this Lubisi report came out to show that there is a major systems upgrade to deal with some of these legacy systems that allows officials to bypass controls, for example, by deleting physical log files. So my question is, have these gaps been closed? So now that the SIU is coming in, and they're going to be doing an investigation, I think from 2004 to date, can we receive an assurance from the minister and his team that the gaps have been closed? And that when that SIU report comes out, that we're going to see a drastically reduced number of fraudulent transactions because the gaps have been addressed. Because we heard in the media, you know, a case of somebody being, or a couple being asked to pay 60,000 rand And this came out of an email to the minister's office. So this is really a red flag. If we're talking about these investigations, we're drilling into the detail. And then allegedly from the minister's office, there's a solicitation of a bribe. Then in terms of the forum shopping, I see it's being investigated. But is it now being red flagged? And to what extent is it being red flagged? So once, are the systems integrated in such a way that you can see this person has made an application here, then there, and now we can red flag it? Because while you're dealing with all of these applications, you're not dealing with other legitimate applications. And so I'd like to understand what is the process that's been put in place to red flag forum shoppers. Then I'd also just like clarity on what is the 303,832 potentially unlawful or irregular movement control system movements that were processed by officials. Just to get an idea, what exactly is this? Then I agree with what Honorable Lazelle says in terms of the those employees that resign or are dismissed, are they still being pursued for criminal charges? But my other question in this regard is there a mechanism in place that these persons are then blacklisted and not able to be employed by other state organs or deployed or deployed into these other state organs? Then I'd also like to raise, Chairperson, one of our first oversights. We noted that applications that came with fake documents, the applicants were being given the opportunity to correct that, which we found to be absolutely unacceptable as a committee. And my question is, has this matter been resolved? Or do persons who submit prima facie fake documents still have the opportunity to correct that and carry on with their applications? And then my final question or other comment, Chairperson, is, you know, I think we see here now there's an indication that there's a big problem in now finding these persons. We are horribly undercapacitated in terms of our internal immigration enforcement. I think from the last reports, which was some time back, we have somewhere around 770 internal enforcement officers for the whole of South Africa, which is completely and utterly inadequate. And Minister, we'd raised the issue of an e-verification system. And my question is, first of all, how do you find these people now? If you do not have their phone number, how do you find them? And then how do you expect other persons to know whether when they receive a visa that it's a document they can trust? Because I've had many cases where persons phone me and say there's foreign nationals on a farm, they've now been detained, etc. And the owner or you know wherever they're working has said, yeah, but they've got documents. Now, how is that owner supposed to know that those documents are real or fake? So if the minister doesn't want to investigate an e-verification system, which essentially allows potential employers to check the validity of a visa, and especially one with a work permit, if the minister does not want to do that, then what is the plan in place so that that would-be employers, etc., can have an easy-to-use mechanism that they can verify, is this a real and legitimate visa, and it has not been blocked? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ross. Honorable Kanyile.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to you and greetings to all the colleagues. Chairperson, let me take this opportunity to welcome presentations from the DHA and from GPW. I also have a few questions that I'd like to raise. During the presentation, there was a slide that spoke to identifying officials to be trained. My question on this one is a clarification question. I'd like to know what criteria is being used to identify the officials that will need to undergo that particular training. And my second question is on the issue of same passport numbers. The presenter indicated that they have identified some. I, however, feel that information is insufficient. What I'd like to find out is if the department is in a position to furnish us with the number of the passport numbers that possess passports that possess same passport numbers, and what action has been taken after they have been those passports they've been identified. And I'd also like to know what steps are in place to identify and deal with all outstanding passports that possess same passport number. Chairperson, the next question that I have, it is with regard to the time frame. I think I have been largely covered on this one by Honorable Lizelle, that it takes to resolve these investigations. I also remember when we joined this portfolio committee, we went on an oversight at SDHA. I think at the time we were doing an oversight on civic services. We were made to believe that for each and every application that is being processed, the official will use their biometrics to process that application so that it will be linked to that particular official. I think for ease of identification, that is the official that dealt with this application. And should there be any investigation that is needed, then that application will be linked to that official. What I would like to find out is if the same system is being used for immigration. And Chairperson, I would also like to go back to the issue that we discussed last year in this portfolio committee, where the minister and the department indicated that they've appointed more officials to deal with the backlog in immigration. We would like to be finished maybe with an update on what progress has been made to date, maybe before we rise for this period. And I'd also like to indicate, I think Honorable Rose has covered me on this issue, but I want to reiterate that Chairperson, these backlogs, they create a space for officials to solicit bribes from the applicants. The first incident, this is the one that Honorable Rose was talking about. It is a matter that we picked up this year where a couple was demanded a bribe of 60,000 rand for the application to be fast tracked. But over and above this, I think I had one or two cases that I've referred to Mr. Makode as well, that after I sent an email requesting a follow-up, then I will get a feedback from an applicant indicating that there was a WhatsApp that they have received where a bribe was demanded from them. But those issues were taken up with the corruption department. So I think this backlog issue needs to be addressed to be able to address these issues. Chairperson, I also have an issue that I have referred to the DDG. I am getting feedback from the DDG on immigration matters. However, it seems like there's some misinformation or misleading information that we get from the officials. There's an application for Mr. Shangirai that was submitted in 2018. It was brought to myself last year. I've been working on it. I think like Honorable Lizelle has indicated that we send follow-up emails almost every day. It is the same issue with myself. I think last week we received an email from, I forgot this official's name, indicating that the matter was finalized and Mr. Shangirai was going to get the feedback on the same day to go and collect the outcome from VFS. And 2 weeks later, the applicant is still waiting for that information. And Chairperson, on GPW, I think I have been largely covered by Honorable Ross on the issue of data loss that needs to be in place to ensure that we prevent any further data loss from occurring. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kanyile. Honorable Mudi.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also take an opportunity and appreciate the presentation. Chair, I'm appreciating the presentations from both the GPW and the DHA because there's a huge progress that one can see or realizes. But Chair, there are some concerns, and I think members would have alluded to a lot of those concerns. I think the numbers or the statistics that we are getting, it's not sufficient. Thinking about how there's a lot of illegal foreign nationals who are operating in our streets. And I think the numbers that we are getting today, they are really not enough. There are a lot of fake illegal foreign national doctors practicing in our streets. There's a lot of them who are also conducting various businesses. And I feel that a lot still needs to be done. And hence I'm saying that the numbers that we are getting, though we see progress from what we would have had the previous time, it is really not satisfying. I just want to check, though, Chair, with the DHA, that with the identified offices, or are there any specific offices identified where they are mostly prone to conducting these corrupt practices? And if indeed they are, what are the security measures put in place in those specific offices or in all Home Affairs offices in ensuring that these practices are kept or they are prevented from continuing in happening? And secondly, Chair, what then happens with those that have been identified or those visas that have been detected, that have been acquired fraudulently? Is there any measure in place put to trace those visas to stop them? I think Honorable Lizel would have alluded also to that how do we then freeze those visas from taking place? But freezing them alone is not enough, because it means they will be now in our shores illegally. What then do we do to ensure that we then they are deported or they are taken back to their countries, or they are removed from our shores? On GPW, the evergreen contracts are also a worrying factor. And I just want to check with the entity, what is the period of those contracts that are currently existing, that are in place, and when are they coming to an end? And when they do come to an end, what is the plan in ensuring that the processes thereafter will take place, will be fair, and allow new players to come on board and have an opportunity to participate with the entity? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mudisemtse. Honorable Pillay, there was a matter the minister has requested you to recap. Can I invite you, Mr. Pillay? Honorable Pillay?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Chair, just briefly to outline, there has been a particular syndicate around passports where South Africans have been used to apply for a passport for a foreign national. And I'm going to be specific that where the process undertakes and it is a South African, and at the moment you get to the photo booth, the person is swapped and you find that a foreign national gets in and the South African gets out. And then that picture then is on the passport with details of a South African. Now, there's been many cases where a person passes on. At that point, you establish that this is what has happened. But further to that, there has been a syndicate operating with officials, with a syndicate. And there are some people who may not have been aware of what was transpiring. And I'm saying this because we found that there are people who are on drugs, unga, etc., that have been used, that have been paid to say, come in and do this. Would we consider those people who come forward voluntarily, not people who are still part of this process, voluntarily, to be able to pardon them or look at how they correct this? That is what I'm asking about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, members, for your comments, the issues you've raised on the two presentations. The members have already covered ground in terms of the issues. Minister, I have three issues that I want also to deposit. One is on the your report cites countries that are involved with syndicates. I wanted to check with you or with the team as to whether there's any movement to interact with those countries, particularly at the level of governance on the issues that are arising from the investigation, Minister, whether the executive had interaction with the particular countries that are cited on the report, on the challenges that we find ourselves in, that their members or officials in those countries are involved, including our officials, and to what extent is the progress in relation to diplomatic relations. The CFO, I'm informed that he's in the meeting of DHA. It appears that this task of the multidisciplinary task team is going to take longer. And I think also there's going to be budget involved. Whether we'll able to, the department will carry this project, or whether it has been budgeted for a particular period. And I think members draw attention to the turnaround time and the period which this project need to be completed. And you can hear members have raising more issues or concerns around the task involved by this task team that is led by Bishop. I want also to check the collaboration between this task team and the Border Management Authority. To what extent is the Border Management Authority involved to cap this syndicate or these corrupt activities that the recommendation are outlining? The last point is on the matter that has been raised by both Honorable Mudisemta and Honorable Izel on the submissions that are arising from the public through public representatives to your office, Minister, in particular to the Immigration Acting DDG. We are receiving a lot of complaints on the backlog. And I think there must be a commitment from your side to commit these members, how are we going to respond to these issues. And I think she's correct, Honorable Zell, that there's a matter that has been raised over time. The chair of the portfolio committee has also raised it with the Director General and the DDG of Civics, Mr. Sigama. Because we don't get the joy of being assisted or appreciating the acknowledgement of the queries that you received from the public. And I think it's an important area that we may need to venture into because we are bombarded by these complaints and there's no appetite from this particular section to respond to the members of the public or to acknowledge at least that this matter is attended to or there are issues on the matter so that we're not sitting on the queries every day. And I think that is a matter that we wanted to raise to your attention. We're going to request now on responses. We'll start with Gavin Printing Works, the CEO. We'll then invite Mr. Bishop and the CFO, the Deputy Minister, and then the Minister. In that order, CEO.
Honorable Chairperson, thank you so much. Let me appreciate the questions that I've received from members of the Portfolio Committee. Allow me, Chairperson, through you to respond together with the members of EXCO, the questions that are ICT related. So Mr. Gwiba will respond to that. And basically that will be the question from Honorable Rose, Honorable Kanyile, as well as Honorable Lizal on some of the questions that they've asked. And the questions from Honorable Modise on the evergreen contracts, as well as the one from Honorable Lizal on the results of cases referred to the Public Service Commission Advocate Ramaswamy, who will respond to that. Let me start, Honorable Chairperson. In terms of the question from Honorable Pillay on the consequence management and what is it that we're doing to make sure that the incident or that we experienced in February 2021 doesn't recur, we have actually been engaging quite rigorously on the process. It is not a situation that makes you sleep at night when you experience a catastrophe like GPW has experienced. It's not a usual occurrence in the public service, and therefore, when it strikes you, you really can't sleep at night. And that's what we've been doing as a management team to make sure that we find solutions going forward and we don't have a recurrence of what has actually happened in 2021. We have put systems in place. Maybe let me start with that. There's a multi-pronged approach that we've been using, engaging critical stakeholders to make sure that you've got backup on-prem as well as remotely. And we had to bring in professionals, as per the recommendations of the MRP team, to beef up capacity, but to also support this entity so that we can ensure business continuity. So we've engaged SSA on the issue of access to our networks. I've written letters to the commissioner of DPCI, just to make sure that some of the cases that needed to be investigated are referred to them. We brought in technical experts to assist us, and that has actually yielded fruit because it has helped us to actually re-automate the e-gazette system that has already gone live, and we are just finalizing the teething challenges that has to go with the system as per any system that you deploy on the system, but gazettes are being issued through that online system as we speak. CETA has been a critical stakeholder. We're participating either in their contract or allowing them to enable us by making sure that we go to the market to get the much needed services within the ICT environment. We have actually even filled posts at the deputy director level in that environment to beef up capacity. The war room meetings that I've mentioned before are still continuing, and that's how we gain traction because all these critical stakeholders are bought into that environment to fight the fires. We've ticked out all the many things that we have achieved, and we're just focusing on that which is outstanding now so that we can soon get out of that mode and then we can just maintain our systems. So we have actually been doing that. When I mentioned earlier that we've even beefed up the capacity by making sure that some of the deputy directors act, it was mainly to increase accountability and responsibility so that each and every manager responsible for the unit, for the work that they're doing, they must be held accountable and they must come and report to EXCO on the work that they're doing. We also developed a procurement plan just specifically for ICT, and it has been shared with CETA, and they are assisting us to make sure that we procure those systems. In terms of consequence management, I've mentioned that 11 officials within this very same environment have been dealt with. I've mentioned that in the report. And there's others that have resigned when we started with the actual investigation. The previous CIO had resigned, and we had the deputy director of infrastructure was also resigned. And at that point, GPW was on the verge of issuing them with the letters of suspension, but then they have then resigned. And the DG database management was also dealt with. And indeed, this from the cases of the consequence management slide that I presented, just to make sure that going forward, we don't get officials being lax. And it is inherent in their job descriptions. Officials know that as ICT specialists, backing up the data is inherent. When you are introduced to your role, you are informed that this is the work that you're expected to do in terms of ICT security, in terms of backing up the data that you're working with, just to make sure that you don't actually lose data. When the UPS actually goes down, when it comes, the power comes back, you should still be able to retrieve your data if it was backed up. And that's what the MRP team also found. So based on that experience, officials within this ICT environment have been backing up the environment, have been using different to make sure that the data is backed up, it's tested, and continuously so patching happens and then is able to be restored. But I'm going to allow the CIO to actually delve deeper into that so that he can then explain technically in terms of what we're doing to make sure that there isn't a recurrence of that. In terms of the data loss, Honorable Rose, I think we also responded in a form of a parliamentary question that we did not have four different data crashes. We only had two incidents where we lost the data, and that's why the mitigating plans have been put in place to make sure that there isn't a recurrence of that. We have full redundancy, we have full replication, and we are able to back up on-prem as well as remotely. And I think Honorable Kanyila's question will also be covered by the CIO. Maybe on that note, through you, Chairperson, let me start with the CIO. to also respond to the questions asked by Honorable Lizelle as well as Honorable Rose and Honorable Kanyile on the issue of systems data loss as well as the outstanding cases, recommendations from the ICT environment. Through you, Chair, if I were to allow the CIO to come in, Mr. Gwiba.
Thank you, Mr. Gwiba.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chairperson. Good day, Honorable Members. Chairperson, in terms of the backups, we do have the backups that exist. We have an architecture that allows us to backup on the disk, which is an online backup that we have. And we also have a backup to tape. The backup to tape, we store it currently at CSIR. We have a schedule where we take the tapes on a weekly basis at the remote site to CSIR. In terms of the systems that we have restored, we are making sure that we conduct the backup. We also test the restores. Dynamic AX in particular, which is our finance system, on a monthly basis, we conduct the restores. The restores are tested by the end users as well. On a quarterly basis, we have our own internal risk management that observes the independence of the process and the compliance from the end users to make sure that we are indeed able to prove to the organization that we resolve. The reports are available. The auditors are giving these reports as well. On the e-gazette, we are still restoring the system, but we have tested on about three times where we have restored the application on a different environment so that we allow the developers to further do their work. So in those instances, we have proven that the backup that exists, we are able to restore, we are able to test that the backup works. In terms of procurement of further solutions that will assist us to even have a more complemented BCP plan, we are advanced in terms of at that advanced stage in terms of procurement plans that we are working with CETA. We are hoping that we should be able to achieve the procurement of those services, which will give us at least more comfort in terms of how we deal with the backups. Thank you. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Gwiba. CEO, is it?
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. On the question from Honorable Lizelle, I need to indicate that we have actually concluded 72% of the recommendations to date. We are only left with 28, which demonstrates progress with regards to the implementation of the recommendations. And we will indeed conclude on the 20 that are upcoming in the next 6 months. And when we come back to the committee, we should be able to demonstrate more progress to show that we are indeed implementing the recommendations and ticking off those that are concluded. I'm going to request Advocate Ramaswamy to take the question on the outstanding results from, the results of the investigations referred to the OPSC, as well as the issue of the Evergreen. Through you, Chairperson, Advocate Ramaswamy.
Can proceed, Advocate.
The person, I think, is muted. If we can unmute himself.
Sorry. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I actually showed my screen instead of the unmute. Sorry about that. Thank you, Honorable Members. The issue of the Office of the Public Service Commission, the following process was followed. We firstly wrote a letter to the Office of the Public Service requesting the matters to be investigated as per the MRP report. And then we subsequently received a letter from the Office of the Public Service Commission acknowledging receipt and further indicating that in terms of their act, the Public Service Act, they can only investigate matters that are within 12 months. Anything above the 12 months, they cannot entertain. However, they gave us a window to say you can send a motivation so that the head of office can consider a condemnation on the matter, which we subsequently did, and they granted us the condemnation. Then they requested additional information with regard to all those matters that we have requested for them to be investigated. We could only provide some information, and most of the information, unfortunately, was lost in the process of the data loss. So we indicated to them that the information that we have provided is the only information available. So they subsequently wrote us a letter dated the 11th of August 2023, where they outlined all the matters and the challenges that they will find in terms of furthering their investigation. And in a nutshell, what they are highlighting there is that in the absence of evidence that can be produced, they cannot take the investigation any further. And that's where the matter ended. With regards to the issue on the evergreen contracts, what we did, we firstly did an audit with the finance division on all the contracts that are available within GPW. And subsequently, then we identified those that do not have a duration. Those are what they labeled evergreen. Then we said, okay, it's going to be a lengthy process to start calling the service providers and, you know, negotiating. So we said, let's have an umbrella approach where we said, all those that do not have a duration, we will give them a period of 3 years from the date of signing the addendum. So effectively, from as far back as 2023, around April, we started dealing with those contracts. So they have effectively 3 years for the duration. And then after the 3 years, they will have to enter into a new contract. And then there are those that were termed sole suppliers. Now, those in terms of the treasury regulations and the advice from the chief procurement officer, we have to put them on a 1 year contract and then make a market analysis if you want to extend. So they must bring the service, I mean the requester of the services must make a market analysis first before they can get into another 12 months contract. So that's how they have opened up for new players to come in. Only 12 months, and after 12 months, there has to be a market analysis report made to say either there is nobody in the in that space or there are people in the space so that it can go on tender. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson, I believe that concludes our responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO. CFO Holambe.
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning to the members, Minister and Deputy Minister, and thank you for your question, Chairperson. So, Chairperson, in respect of the budget for the MDTT for 23-24, in other words, the current financial year, the budget is 41.613 million. Chairperson, we have received a budget request from the CAJV for the 24-25 financial year as well, the new financial year or the incoming one. That request is under consideration. We will have to make a plan, Chair, and fund at least part of that request. In addition, Chair, we will have to prioritize for the SIU investigation also for the 24-25 financial year. We expect the SIU investigation to start off slowly, Chair, so we'll probably not start with a huge amount, but that discussions with SIU and the payment modalities we'll still have to conclude as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Holambe. Mr. Bischoff.
Thank you, Chair. So I will ask Mr. Shakir Williams, the CEO of CAJV, to respond on an overview, which should answer a number of questions that the that was posted by the honourable members relating to the time criteria, as well as the questions related to red flagging of bulk criteria, as well as some of the training initiatives. And then I will ask an overview from Mr. Jock Theron from Ottendorf and Theron Incorporated, the legal team, to respond in terms of some of the processes that will unfold in terms of their legal opinion to deal with some of these bulk matters that have been flagged as irregular on the system. And then I will ask Mr. Warren Meyer, who's the specialist data analyst, to talk about the NCS movement control system, duplicate passport issue that was raised by honourable members, as well as some of the processes to identify how we go about identifying and flagging these matters for investigations to further guide investigators and further guide the department on any other parallel processes enhancing systems to prevent gaps and to spot gaps and prevent exploitation. Thank you. I hand over to Mr. Shakir Williams.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, Minister. Chairperson, I'd like to respond by giving a bit of an overview in terms of our approach over the last 12 months. So as we have presented, we are guided by the 25 priority areas of the Lubisi report. The approach to deal with that meant that we had to deal with a lot of historical data. In dealing with that historical data, we've had to go and unpack the specifics inside of each of those. That has allowed us to identify the transgressions that I detailed in this presentation, but that has also then allowed us to formulate the legal opinion, which now gives a legal framework in order to deal with those fraudulent documentations and transgressions en masse. By taking the approach, we have also used our link analysis, which has identified the gaps in specifics. And this is shared with the Office of the Director General. And surely this will guide procurement of systems going forward based on these tangible requirements. Our approach has also been one of dealing with the labor relations and our particular training that we have executed in those spaces has been primarily with those individuals that have been responsible for the registers of matters. That has been the criteria that we have chosen simply because they are dealing with the information on an ongoing basis. Inside of the our engagements internally in the Home Affairs environment, the Border Management Agency has engaged us in official communication. We have met with them and we are in the process of dealing with their particular set of challenges that they are facing. But in dealing with this project, there has been quite a bit of information that we've had to look at. And having detailed analysis of each case is merely to buttress the approach that labor relations and the disciplinary hearings and the criminal investigations then ultimately do take. So within a three-year appointment which we have, we are gearing all our efforts towards finalizing inside of that time frame. But we do have challenges. Record keeping is a challenge, revision of budgets. But ideally, the overall guiding principle that we are following is to effectively take the huge volumes of information, bring that down and group them together so that it's what strong, specific criminal referrals, strong, specific disciplinaries that do result and will result in appropriate consequence management. And that is the start and end of how we engage with all of the information. So as much as we are delivering a presentation relating on statistics, there is an overriding guiding approach in terms of bringing these things together so that we can effectively support the Minister's Office and the DG to get to the end of these disciplinary hearings. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair, I will then ask Mr. Jock Theron proceed.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Minister and Honourable Members. To address some of the questions raised, especially by the Honourable Member Pillay, I think it's worth noting that the disciplinaries and investigation matters that are being dealt with are very complex and often intertwined with criminal activities, as you would have noted from Mr. Bishop's initial presentation. The department prioritizes thoroughness over speed, and that's what I've noted. And this is exceptionally important. As we've seen, a rushed approach in disciplinary matters can often lead to financial burdens if decisions are set aside. Hence, a careful approach is adopted to ensure fairness and adequate preparation before proceeding with charges. I believe that will answer or clarify your question with regards to the suspension, because with comprehensive investigations, the HR and Industrial Relations Department can make informed decisions on disciplinary actions. What's also important to note is that the department has initiated alternative means of discipline, simply put, not just charging someone and running a disciplinary course, but advancing a progressive approach to the disciplinary hearings to ensure an even more fair and expedient process if the matter is so warranted. Further to what Mr. Bishop has said with regards to the legal opinion, all I can do is echo what he effectively said. Essentially, a legal opinion has been done that provides a framework to address the majority of concerns, especially the problem areas. And this legal document, as will be presented with the, will be discussed with the legal department of the department and obviously the SIU to facilitate the practical approach in implementing it in to ensure that one can get and give proper effect to the powers as vested within the relevant parties by the statutes.
Thank you, Jock. I now today ask that Mr. Warwick Meyer deal with the NCS and related matters.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and committee members. Warwick Meyer, data specialist on at CAJB for the multidisciplinary task team. To answer Honourable Rose's question regarding what the MCS or the 303,832 number mentioned in the presentation is about, we identified certain users that, based on their levels, they weren't authorized to process transactions on the movement control system. Therefore, we identified those 303,832 potentially unlawful or irregular movements. And these movements and those users will need to be investigated by the investigation team to identify if, in fact, they were not authorized to do so, and if they weren't authorized to do so, the people that benefited from those movements, if there's any problems as far as their locality in South Africa, and other investigative outcomes. As far as Honourable Kanyele and Pandamada's question regarding the people using same passport numbers just needs to be interpreted correctly. Two different people using the same passport number. It's not the same person using the same passport multiple times. In more specific, Honourable Kanyele asked how many, and there were in the Lubisi report we referred to 12,299. The repeat version of that test is again before the full number is identified to be further investigated and reviewed. All of these data sets that we identify, we do on the basis of red flag testing. Therefore, there might be false positives in those results. Therefore, the investigation leg is important. It's not a straightforward suspend everyone. And then as far as questions regarding how do we identify things, As we investigate and collect additional information, we find new tests or take existing tests and enhance them. And on the principle of that enhancement, find additional red flags. And on the basis of those red flags, we then assess the 25 aspects we've been mandated to do. How do these fit in here? If they don't fit in, we refer it to the department and say that we've identified this, and it's up to the department to ask us to investigate that as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. That concludes our answers as raised. And if there's anything else, we are happy to fill in. Thank you.
Hi, Chairperson. Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Thanks very much for and your team for the responses. Deputy Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chair, and greetings to yourself, the Minister, the management, complement of Home Affairs, and all the members of the Portfolio Committee. Just a few points I would like to make comments on. The first one, Chair, is that we must really appreciate that work has been done. And this work that has been done really shows commitment to deal with the rot and corruption that we have seen in the past. And I must alert the committee that in our approach, we must always remember that fighting corruption also comes with costs. And those costs will be financial costs in terms of investigations. There will be time delay issues as well as system and process change costs, which means that out of all that we have observed, and if you look at the recommendations, they are quite clear in terms of the system changes that we must effect. And also, we must just remember that there will always be criminal procedures that will have to be followed, which means that when we are dealing with corruption, we are not just dealing with a person doing something wrong and then you cut them off from work and so on. There are processes that you have to follow to the level wherein you ultimately get a conviction of that person. That's when you can then say justice has been done. And that process is delicate, and it has a lot of legal issues in it. And I will really plead with the Portfolio Committee that we must make sure that we follow through and we give it patience to make sure that the processes that we follow are thorough, so that at the end of the day, we do not have people walking off just because of a procedure issue that might have not been followed. And I'm very happy that now we're going to be having other institutions like the SIU coming into the fray. And I think we have the CFO has dealt with the issues of funding there too. The other part is that, which is the issue that was raised by Honorable Ross, is that modernizing our systems is part of our agenda. It's part of what we do. For instance, we are looking at ways of easily verifying documentation by use of expert organizations that will make it easier for us to verify bank statements and information that is submitted to us, thus shortening the turnaround time we have for verification of documents, as well as improving credibility, but more so making sure that we conclude applications in time. The trusted employer scheme is part of those innovative ways of making sure that we do not hamper the economy by having employers struggling with skills. So are some of the innovative ways in which we are introducing to make sure that what we have found out does not derail progress and does not stall the economy. Lastly, S15 does deal with the implications and recommendations that will be followed. For instance, if visas were issued fraudulently, we are looking at options of annulling those visas and V-listing those people. And obviously, V-listing those people means that they no longer have the authority to be in the country, or they are in the country illegally. And as such, proper steps will then have to be followed. By all in all, Chair, I think that good work has been done, and I urge that the Portfolio Committee supports the work that we continue to do. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult. It will have its ups and downs. But at the end of the day, we are pushing towards making sure that those who are responsible are convicted, and those who are also party to buying these fraudulent visas also suffer the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Minister?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll answer a question firstly from Honorable Pili about employees who are still at work while investigations are going on. I'm not sure whether honorable members might remember this, that this question was once raised by a complaint from somebody in government printing works, claiming that there are certain people must be suspended while investigations are going on. We looked for legal advice from an eminent labor lawyer who said it is not a general condition. It's not it's not something that is just practiced automatically. It depends on the nature of the case. It depends on the type of work what the person is doing. It depends on the type of investigation. How will that person affect that investigation? Mm-hmm. Whether when that person is within the department, he is with he or she within reach of interfering with what is happening. So it's not automatic that anybody must be suspended while there are investigations. But there are serious cases where we actually do suspend them. And you'll be aware that in this case, after Lubisi report, a lot of employees from the permitting section were so suspended. The issue of amnesty, Honorable Pile, it's a very difficult one because these are criminal actions. It is inconceivable to believe that a person goes to, I mean, like in this case of passports, you remember when you arrested the Pakistani kingpin in April 2022 in our Kruger stop offices, they specifically arranged to go there during the night and they arranged with the Home Affairs official who's corrupt. They get collected by Kumbis to go there during the night. It's inconceivable that an adult South African may not pick up the actions that are happening during the night, that they'll be illegal or not. That's making them too innocent. And secondly, for that very same South African to even receive money for those actions, there's no adult who just receives money for nothing. They definitely know that I'm doing something that is illegal and I'm being paid. The people who was involved in this passport fraud, it's a security officer. It's a lady who's a security officer who was paid 500 rand to allow her identity to be used in this fraudulent passports. And how they do it is cover it because as a security officer, she had to renew her license to be a security officer with CIRA, the Private Security Industry Regulatory Authority. And when you went to CIRA, the information coming out that her photos have been swapped and all that is then that she confessed. All we can do is to cancel that passport of that particular individual. I'm not sure what amnesty we give to her except charge her for corruption. We have to charge them because we can't keep on giving amnesty for people who commit crime and knowingly committing crime as if they are innocent victims. They are definitely not victims. They are perpetrators. And for that reason, we tend to take a harsh stance. Even for kids who are on Yaube, being on Yaube in itself is a very difficult thing, I know. It needs rehabilitation, but it does not mean that people who are on Yaube commit crimes, they are left off the hook. It does not necessarily mean that. They do get punished, they do get arrested, some go to jail, and we will adopt a similar posture. As other members have said, that this thing is taking a long time. The Deputy Minister and Mr. Bishop Mr. Bishop's team tried to respond to that. Honorable members, when somebody tells you that they are dealing with 11.9 billion data sets, that tells you how much work there is to be. And remember that this is work over a very, very long time. Remember that with the Lubis report, we asked them to start as far back as 2004. From 2004 until now, that's 20 years. Events that took place for 20 years cannot really be finalized within a very short space of time. Now, when they started investigating, they said, we are starting in 2014, because before that, things were manual. Now, we are not saying because those areas were manual from 2014 backwards to 2004 for a period of 10 years. We are not saying they must be left off the hook. This multidisciplinary team must go there because there are documents, even if they are manuals. The reason that Lubis report didn't go there was to try and save time. And as you can see, in saving time to bring the report quicker, there was this gap, which they confessed about and said, we could not go back to 2014 backwards simply because it's going to be taking a lot of time. But those things still need to be investigated. And that's what this team is presently doing, looking for manual records, et cetera. It has to take time, honorable members, unfortunately. Honorable Lizelle again asked whether if we encounter a fraudulent document, whether we need any investigation. Unfortunately, yes, that's what the court demands in South Africa, because nearly everybody, people understanding the legal system in South Africa, nearly everybody who's caught with fraud, they don't just smile and say it's fraud. They try to twist and turn and fight back. Many of them claim, especially foreign nationals, they claim that they are not the ones who committed the fraud. They were helped by an agent, an immigration agent, who brought the document to them, and they were not aware that the immigration agent practiced fraud. That type of investigation, they are or not, and our suspicion is that they paid some form of money, obviously, to that immigration officer to do what they have done. And now they are pleading ignorance. We usually even want to know, if you discover that these immigration officers did that, did you open a police case? We found that in a few cases, yes, they opened the police case, then those ones are genuine. But many others just claim that it's an immigration agent who did this to me, and then they must go scot-free. So we are forced to investigate. The issue of freezing visas that were fraudulently obtained, I wish, Honorable Lizelle, I wish we could do that. That is my desire. That is your desire. That is the desire of every member of the public, because we don't want to see fraud. Very unfortunately, that's not what the law says in South Africa. That's not what the court practice. And talking from experience, we have lost quite a number of cases by moving this way, believing anything that is fraud is justifiable to freeze it and block it. A case in point is the issue of Pastor Bushiri. Immediately after we discovered that his PR is fraudulent, firstly, we took the people who gave him those documents, we suspended them, investigated, we fired them, we referred the matter to police, and we wanted to get our documents back. But this process was rushed, and the applicable procedures in terms of PAJA were not applied. And the moment Bushiri received a notice that we know that these documents were fraudulent, he rushed to court to interdict us from getting those documents. And unfortunately, the magistrate granted you and said, judge rather, granted you and said we cannot take back those documents until Bushiri appears in court, because he claimed that we were trying to follow PAJA by asking him to give reasons why we can't get the documents. And we are asking him questions which are going to be part of his defense in court, and he's unable to answer them. And the judge ruled that we must leave him until he appears in court. You now know that it's about the third year now that this has happened, and he's still keeping our fraudulent documents. So when we deal with these matters, we have got to be very careful about the loss of the country. Yeah, there's a question again from Honorable Lizelle about people who resign, whether when you resign the case is dead. What dies is your DC within the department, because the DC is to determine whether we are going to fire you or fine you or demote you or do whatever. If we are gone, we can't do any one of those. But what does not die is the criminal case, because most of these people who resign and run away is because they already know that they committed something wrong. So they can only be saved from a DC process, but they cannot be saved from the criminal case. Police or hawks will still go after them. And we have done that in quite a number of cases. Even for those who were fired, we still refer them to police. The issue of Faisal visas taking long, yes, we are settled with this problem. We are trying our best to solve it. But you may remember in one of the answers to the question from members of parliament here on this issue, we showed how some of the marriages, in other words, some of the people calling themselves spouses, which I had the Honorable Rizal also acceding to, that some of them are not true marriages. In fact, we are worried by an escalation of notarial contracts. Notarial contracts where a notary general, two people just get in, a couple just get into the notary general's office. They declare that they stay together and he must write the contract that they are staying together and as spouses. And that's recognized by law as a legitimate staying together. But in most cases, we found that staying together doesn't exist. We have to send immigration officials to spy upon such people, unfortunately. I'm using the word spy deliberately because they have got to go and peep in and find if these two people went to get a contract that they are staying together, are they really staying together? Immigration officials will visit that household or the address given in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, and find no spies. And they repeat that for about 6 months. Then we conclude that these people don't stay together. It's then that we go to court. Before that, just by mere suspicion that this is not a fraudulent, it's not a true marriage, the courts will not accept that. And unfortunately, we are forced to take that long route of having to find and follow up people for a long period of time. Honorable Lizelle also said we can't expect the DG to do everything. Yes, the DG is working with the DGs, chief directors and directors, and it's the responsibility of the DG to make sure that if the people working under him as the head of administration don't do their job, then there is consequence management. Because at my level, I do consequence management to the accounting officer, and the accounting officer will have to do consequence management to the others. The other question that was asked is IT systems. Chair, we are working night and day on these IT systems. You may be aware that we even have to demote our IT, the head of IT in the department for non-performance, and he subsequently resigned from the department. We even approached CSIR to help us on IT, and after a long discussion, they even agreed to second somebody from CSIR to come and head IT in the department for a particular period. And that secondment has just happened. I think it's just a month, if I'm not mistaken. It's just for a month that we found a secondment of an expert from CSIR who is going to help us with our IT system so that they get upgraded. That question was asked by Honorable Ruos. Honorable Ruos, we are really trying our best and we're looking forward on this issue. Last week, we had a very whole day meeting with CSIR, and the report they are giving are showing that there's progress apart from segregating a person in the department. The issue of bribe we are mentioning, which is in the papers, Honorable Ruos, is a pity. If you read that article, it was targeting me very indirectly, very obliquely. They somehow thought they could throw mud at me as being corrupt because they are mentioning a person working in the borders and they are mentioning a PA in my office. Now, that newspaper reported this matter before we could respond. Of course, they did write us, and they are writing there that we asked Home Affairs, and there was no response. We provided response the following day because we are still investigating. For instance, they gave us phone numbers, which they believe belong to people who have done this work. They gave us a bank account, which we, the CFO has to investigate whether in our databases there is such a bank account, whether any of our employees have handled that as a bank account. So while we're doing those things, they wrote a story. The fact of what happened is that the emails which they sent us of people who were asking for, who were demanding fraud, the emails belong to my PA, yes. And the other email belongs to somebody who is a port manager in one of the ports of entry. Their emails were hacked before that, and they reported immediately to the IT department that their emails were hacked. People were even warned. We even issued a warning that if anybody gets information from these emails, they must know that they are hacked. I'm sure honorable members have also been hacked before in one or the other. And we believe it's that hacking, which was reported prior, that the person who hacked them was preparing for this type of bribe. Because I can read from the article that they obliquely say the bribe was demanded immediately on sending emails to my PA and another person working at the borders. The two people have got nothing to do with visas, the people who they sent those emails to. So I can only conclude that the target was me, to show that the minister is somehow practicing corruption. Even when you read that article, you can see that is obliquely referring to me. But my PA's, what you call, was hacked. She reported it before, long before this incident. And we believe the two incidents are related. And we believe the matter, counter-corruption is investigating. And we believe they will also refer the matter to the police. But we also want to emphasize, again, like I do with the case of Nyaube, many members of the public know, many adults know when somebody is asking for bribe money. They do know. If somebody says, in order for me to do this work for you, we want 30,000 rand immediately, and you are being told by an individual, it's not in any law, it's not anywhere you have applied, and they are suddenly saying, in order to do our application, we need 30,000 rand. Any reasonable adult will know that this is fraud. And we are happy that in this case, these people did not pay that money, because they could detect that is fraud. Any reasonable adult will smell fraud when they see it, because the manner in which it comes, people know that they receive government services and they don't have to pay exorbitant sums of money for government services, because they know that ordinary people won't be able to do that, I mean, to pay. So if somebody says for me to give you a passport or a visa, I want 30,000 rand, a reasonable adult ought to know that this is fraud and report it immediately. And we are happy that they so reported and they never paid the fine. So we are calling off members of the public to also be vigilant when it comes to matters of fraud. The other question I want to ask is, how do potential employers know? That's the question from Honorable Lewis. Firstly, the inadequate number of immigration officials. Yes, we agree. Remember, we are the ones who presented the business plan to Treasury. It's our staffing. And the Treasury is trying, but it's going uphill because of the state of the economy. As I'm speaking, last week I visited 72 immigration officials who have just been hired, who were in training. They are being trained to take this job, but we agree, Honorable Ross, there is a big shortage, and we are really pleading with Treasury all the time to help us plug this shortage, because they are doing very important work. The question is, how do potential employees know the validity of permits? Honorable Ross, they have to check, and I'll refer you to Section 38 of the Immigration Act that talks about employment, an illegal foreigner. No person shall employ a foreigner whose status does not authorize him or her to be employed by such a person, or a foreigner on terms, conditions, or in a capacity different from those contemplated in such a foreigner status. It goes on to say, an employer should make a good faith effort to ascertain that no illegal foreigner is employed by him or her, or to ascertain the status or citizenship of those who or whom they employ. So the act puts this responsibility on the shoulders of employer. It's their job to check and cross-check, and they can check with us. In the banks, it's easier because we have got this verification, as you say. They are directly linked to the National Population Register. Unfortunately, we don't have that system yet in immigration, but the employers themselves ought to check. And I can assure you where I'm sitting, Honorable Viewers, many employers are aware that they are employing illegal people, and they do so deliberately, because some of them have been taken to court. Unfortunately, they get fined 3,000 rand and released, and they come and do it again. So many of them do it knowingly. The Act actually implores them to come and check with us whenever they are given a document. And I'm sure that, apart from the Immigration Act, is normal practice, even in government. Anybody who has applied for a job in government, they send in their certificate. HR is their job to check with SAPA whether they are authentic. They send in employment records. We check with their previous employers. We check police records. We check all sorts of things from people that we want to employ before we employ them. That's why employing an individual takes so long. So employers must do equally the same, especially if they know that the person I'm employing is not from this country. They ought to know that the documents might not be valid and I need to check. It's my job as an employer to check whether these documents are valid or not. At the moment, unfortunately, that's what we have to follow. Honorable Kanile, I think your questions have been answered, except the one on Bakam, because you asked Bakam biometric access control movement, whereby any of Home Affairs official, before they issue a document, they must open the computer, no longer with the password as they used to do in the past, and come and claim that password has been stolen. They must use their fingerprints, and nobody's fingerprint can be stolen. So that helps us to trace quickly who issued a particular document. But honorable members, let's remember, Bakam is relatively new. Some of the issues that this team is investigating, they happened long before Bakam came into being. So to go and trace manually which official issued that document, it takes a long time. If it is in recent days, if it happened recent days, we'll know the official and then start following up with them, the conditions under which they released the document. So Bakam is helping, but it's helping in cases that happened recently. It's not helping in cases that happened long ago, like the cases that are in question here, that are being investigated. The Honorable Modise Mcha asked if there are any offices that are generally prone to committing crime and fraud, yes, and malfeasance. Yes, definitely. You remember that the DDG for Counter-Corruption reported to this office that more than 60% of their cases they investigate is immigration. More than 60% of corruption in Home Affairs is to do with immigration. The other 40% is the other areas. But within immigration itself, the area that is generally prone to corruption is permitting. Honorable members will remember this report came into being. It was after Bushiru got his documents fraudulently. We also heard that Omotoso, the Nigerian reverend, whatever they call him, who is on trial for rape in Tebeja, also got this document in the wrong way. And while we're asking ourselves who else, the 14 people working in permitting wrote a petition to me demanding that the counter-corruption unit must stop investigating their errors. In other words, they are the ones who disclosed that we are committing errors. They never called it corruption. They said the errors we commit must not be investigated. That's what, you know, showed me. I mean, that's why I saw red lights all over. I saw flames with this statement. And that's how I put Lubisi report. And here it is showing that these are not just errors. These are things which are done by people who are determined and who plan. And remember, honorable members, when you investigate something done by a person who is internal in that, who knows all the workings, they cover their tracks because they know that what they are doing is illegal. They even know how an investigation will catch them, and they go and cover their tracks. That's why some of the investigation will take so long. These are not random acts where somebody just steal randomly. They sit and plan and said, in order not to be caught, this is what I must do, this is what I must avoid, this is what I must hide. And investigators will have to go into that. The issue of freezing visas that are fraudulent also or illegal, I've also responded to that. And maybe I'll remind honorable members about the case, and I can see it's on News 24 today. The case that whose judgment was in January about blocking of IDs, where Home Affairs was blocking IDs of people who are expected to have obtained them fraudulently. You'll remember that I came out in the open and confessed that this work of blocking IDs is serving a legitimate government process. Unfortunately, there's no law that covers it. And the court ruled that it is a legitimate thing, it's a good thing, but it must follow fair administrative justice in terms of PAJA. Meaning what? Even if you suspect that this individual has obtained this document fraudulently, you still have to write to them an audio alteram patel letter and say, please give me reasons why we can't take back this document. It's quite unfortunate because many Home Affairs officials have complained that the moment you go, that the person disappears or go and take the document to commit massive fraud, knowing that their data is numbered. We have to show that to the court. You'll remember that even the bank complained to the court that if we just unblock those IDs, in 700,000 of them, the banks in South Africa may jointly lose 15 billion rand. I think it was 17, yes, 17 billion rand. They even wrote an affidavit to court to support our case. In the judgment, the judge does not refer to that affidavit, but that's what the bank said. But to show that the judge also understood our dilemma, we asked for 90 days to investigate those IDs before we unblock them. And she gave us 12 months. I want to understand that the reason that she gave us 12 months is that she understood the magnitude of the work of investigating this type of fraud or this type of things. So honorable members must just know that it takes time. On slide 15 of the MDT report, they are actually showing a legal opinion. This legal opinion is in terms of what usually happens in the court about the fact that after identifying these people, they must be sent an audio alteram patel letter. They are showing a legal process which must be followed. Without that process, you are going to lose a lot of cases, honorable members. So you just have to bear with us that the laws of the country are such that even a person who has committed fraud, sometimes it takes a very long time and hard work to try and apprehend them. Honorable Chairperson, the interactions, I have not interacted with China, for instance, or some of the countries that I mentioned, but I did interact with the ambassador of Pakistan on this matter. And the reason that I didn't go to others is because of the answer he gave me. When I was complaining about Pakistanis who are coming here, defraud documents and do all that, he said, Minister, those are traffickers which are also not wanted in Pakistan. And he said, if you in your country, you allow them, you can't come and blame us. These are criminal cases. Deal with them criminally. They've got nothing to do with diplomacy because We never sent them. We never sent anybody as Pakistan to come to South Africa and do all the wrong things. So if they are criminals, it's because maybe they found that it's easier to commit crime in your country. So you must do something about it. And indeed, we are doing so. So it's not going to be easy for us to go to the Chinese and tell them about what their nationals are doing here. As revealed by this report, we must deal with them as criminals who have got nothing to do with the government of China or with their ambassador. We'll just have to deal with them and see what their country says about that. The interaction between MTT and BMA, yes, you will be aware that the cases that they will be investigating, like a movement control system, are at the borders, and that's a purview of BMA. So there's no way they'll go on with this work without talking to the BMA, where they need some clarity. Thank you very much, Chairperson. But I want to conclude by saying, honorable members, please bear with us. On the report by next year, if you remember, we once forced them to bring a report here because members of parliament were impatient and they made terrible mistakes or there were gaps. When we complained, they said no, but we will still continue with our forensic investigation. You were in a hurry. You demanded the report before time, and this is the report we can give to you. You can't demand the report before we finalize our investigation and come and complain. In other words, they were saying, when we do forensic investigation, allow us to reach right at the bottom so that you don't come and blame us if we've done shoddy work. And I think that's what the MDD team is telling us here. That is a lot of work. Allow us to investigate. Please be patient. You'll be happy with the results when they eventually come. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Minister, for your responses. The Deputy Minister, Mr. Bishop Tim, and the Government Printing Works CEO. And thanks, honorable members, for having interacted with the two reports. This is a report that we have endorsed as members of the Portfolio Committee since the Minister has brought this matter to our attention. In particular, the team that was appointed, led by Lubisi, and that were led by Advocate Mujeng Gumbi. The committee take note of these two reports, acknowledge and appreciate the progress thus far that has been made. It is an important briefing, given that Parliament will be rising soon. And it was important that we get a sense from these two institutions that you are leading, Minister, in terms of the progress that has been made, the limitation that may arise in the course of duty, and the members of the committee, because they, since the 2019, sit with this matter, including the Government Printing Works, critical issues that arise there. And this, I think, will strengthen the work that has already been demonstrated or highlighted by both the institution which members of the committee we do comment. It is important that we have interacted with yourselves and will monitor planning or the flow of implementation in relation to the work that has been done. It may not be similarly with the institution that you have now identified, Minister, in relation to the issues that must come before the committee. We could not wait until this matter be in the next 3 years, given the work that the committee that you've appointed or had to deal with. So it is important that we familiarize ourselves with the issues that are arising, because the committee will at a particular time be requested to table this report or this briefing report to Parliament. So in relation to our work of the Parliament and conducting oversight, we appreciate the work that has been done so far. We know that in our last committee meeting, we have resolved that we may need to call again Government Printing Works to deal with the areas of which members have raised including a reference to the balance sheet, if I can recollect the notes, and the portfolio committee secretary will facilitate that before we rise, so they're able to get into key issues that members have raised in our last committee meeting. Thanks, members, and the minister and your team again for the good work that has now been demonstrated through the collective efforts of the portfolio committee members and yourself as the head of Home Affairs and Government Printing Works. Mr. Matonsi, thus far, is there any other matter that you need to inform the portfolio committee?
Chairperson, no, there's no other matter except that we're meeting this week.
Okay. Thanks very much, members, honorable members. Thanks very much, Minister and your team, CEO, Mr. Bischoff and your team, colleagues. The meeting stands adjourned.